Welcome to an all-new series of the McFuture Podcast. I'm Steve Factor, and we've gotten all your cards. I've gotten all those hugs at the airport from you and from your emotional support dogs and chickens. This time around, I'm doing something very different. I'm so excited about the season. In the past, the McFuture Podcast was kind of a mix of episodes where I put my own ideas out, but also ones where I've had these amazing guests like Larry King and Jim Jefferies and Jesse Ventura and a bunch of other people. I have a confession to make. The only reason I was having named guests on the show was because it's a crowded marketplace. I was hoping that some of their celebrity juices drip down on me and allow the show to stand out. In reality, the episodes that I did solo were outperforming guest episodes. Realistically, Larry King does not need my help getting his message out. I do need your help to get my message out. And I've got a ton of original episodes planned. They're going to be awesome. That doesn't mean I won't have guests again. I'm thinking of doing it in this really cool live setting. And I'll keep people updated through the mailing list. So be sure to sign up. First up is a six-part series I'm extremely proud of on one way to do universal care in the United States without breaking everything. Each episode is a standalone set of ideas, so you can enjoy it even if you drop dead by the second or third episode. The next season, that's going to be even more ambitious. For about the last year, I've been doing this talk called Don't Build a Business, Build a Religion. People think that our future is going to bring us closer to truth. Over the course of this series, I'm going to make a well-researched case for how our world will be built around faith. Now, this isn't some religious mumbo jumbo. I haven't gotten converted to anything. I'm going to prove the way we do business, the way we live, the way institutions cater to us. Everything is going to change. Each of the episodes will cover a piece of the story, and eventually I'll wrap them up into my next book. I've worked my ass off on this stuff. I would love for you to review the show on iTunes, share, tell a friend, send the word out there if you like this. Let's jump right in. First of all, I'm not a healthcare expert. My world is innovation, entrepreneurship, and something I've been doing a lot of lately for clients. I'm calling it functional futurism. If you listen to the typical futurist and they're telling you about, oh, flying cars and we're going to be uploading our consciousness into the cloud, that's all great, but you're going to have to live to be 375 years old to check their work. The kind of futurism I'm doing is the next 5 to 10, maybe 15 years out. If you're going to plunk down $100 million, you need to have a point of view of what that world might look like to know what role you might play in it. Even if it's wrong, it's like that Rush song, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. The reason I even got into this whole healthcare thing was a healthcare tech company hired me to come up with a no BS vision for US healthcare. I really can't wait to share it with you. The last time I was this ghoulishly giddy was after the Great Recession. The thing that nearly destroyed our economy and wiped out most of my retirement savings also gave me a sense of purpose and a book that I got to write. U.S. healthcare is in exactly the same situation. It's this tipsy Jenga pile full of bad decisions and unintended consequences and tons of complexity. The only thing more frightening than healthcare's collapse are the three groups trying to change it or save it. The first, I have tried to come up with a nice word for it. I can't. Maybe you guys can figure it out. I'm calling them benevolent boneheads. There's a ton of well-meaning do-gooders who see healthcare as a moral right. There's nothing wrong with that, but they're also trying to solve it with Europe's greatest hits from 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. They don't seem to have any interest in making the numbers work in this reality with a different set of players, a different budget, a different population. There's so much different about what we are compared to those other countries. The second group are vested interests. healthcare is a huge business. So you've got providers and insurers, which, by the way, a lot of people can't tell the difference between the two. The provider is the person that actually digs in and pulls out your liver, not for fun, but for a medical procedure. And then there are insurers, which pay the providers. Then there's the drug companies and a bunch of innovators and investors and states and corporations. Everybody is fighting and lobbying and scheming to get a little tiny piece of the action, but very few of them are fighting for the overall right answer. Even if we implemented all of their best ideas, they're kind of nipping around the edges of this broken system. All they're doing is just adding complexity. That's solving anything. Finally, this is the group that irritates me the most. I'm going to call them oblivious pretenders. There's a bunch of people, and they exist on the left and the right, that are pretty affluent, that kind of meekly endorse fixing the system, whatever that means. Ultimately, they don't believe there's a problem. The greatest irony is they're the ones at the greatest risk. They just don't know it. Years ago, I have to confess, I professed my love for single-payer healthcare, and I wrote this article about it. I was, Medicare for all, it's going to solve everything. Let's call that a premature infatuation. We use Medicare for all, which is a type of solution, universal care, which is who is covered, and single payer, which is who pays, interchangeably. That is not the case. This time around, I did a ton of research. I'm also avoiding a lot of the emotional or moral arguments. I'm not your priest or your dad, unless a paternity test proves otherwise. Instead, I'm focusing on root causes, the economics, and what's actually feasible today. I'm trying to think of it as a conservative approach to a progressive issue. Is there even a problem? You've heard all the scary statistics. Americans spend way more on healthcare for worse outcomes than any developed country in the world. The Swiss, they live 5 years longer and they spend half of what we do. Every drug and procedure costs more here than in countries whose athletes smoke on treadmills. I'm looking at you, France. Healthcare companies are also consolidating. That's limiting our choice and consumer leverage. Plus, they're locking in all of their advantages by buying off politicians. They've spent $7.7 billion on lobbying since 1998, and $500 million just in 2016. Can you imagine that kind of money floating around? Who do you think is writing all these policies? Why do you think the system is broken? Someone did the math, and they figured out that Big Pharma alone gets a 77,500% return on their investment for lobbying. You couldn't get that kind of return if you gave Mark Zuckerberg $100,000 the day he decided to give up being a pickup artist and start coding full time. As a result, insurance rates are going up about 10 to 20% a year. Some of those increases are buried inside of deductibles. You've got to spend $2,000, $3,000, sometimes $5,000 before your insurance even kicks in. Still, nobody cares. Only 4% of Americans are uninsured. 4%. And that's down from 9% before Obamacare kicked in. And most of the uninsured, they're poor and they don't vote. They don't sit around tweeting at Nancy Pelosi. They can't fly Lindsey Graham on a private jet or find him a nice girl to finally settle down with. The half of Americans who do vote are rich, comparatively rich, because their employers are absorbing most of the increases. They're only paying $89 out of pocket, and their company pays $432. They're completely shielded from how our system is fucked up. Oh, did I say that? I mean, messed up. I better be nice. 77% of employees think they're well served by our system. That doesn't leave a lot of people protesting or pushing for change. There's a deeper reason none of this is being solved. We're asking the wrong question. We're solving the wrong problem. We're all busy beavers running around trying to figure out, how do we provide better healthcare? How? Should it be Obamacare or single payer or something terrific? How is a commodity? We could send a dim-witted intern to copy and paste all the best ideas from all the top healthcare systems, and we'd be done in a month if we wanted to. The real question is why? Why should we do this? For the answer, I'm going to read a quote from a great man. Some might even say the greatest man. Quote, "We must not allow citizens with medical problems to go untreated. The goal should be clear. Our people are our greatest asset. We must take care of our own. We must have universal health care. Just imagine the improved quality of life if the issue of access to health care were dealt with imaginatively. With more than 40 million Americans living in fear that an illness or injury will wipe out their savings or drag them into bankruptcy, how can we truly engage in the pursuit of happiness as our founders intended?" That quote is from a great man, a terrific man, Mr. Donald J. Trump, our president. It's from his book from 2000 called The America We Deserve. And boy, are we getting it. Despite these beautiful words, probably written by someone who's since been dissolved in acid, our will is weak. The three Republican proposals so far, Trump Care, Ryan Care, Graham Care, are mostly just tax cuts for rich guys, the guys who pay for their campaigns. And they're kind of dressed up as health kills. Actually, that's what they were. They were health kills. Each of those plans would have probably lost coverage for about 20 to 30 million Americans. And all these brainless analysts say, Republicans had 8 years. Is this the best they could come up with? They're out of ideas. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Republicans aren't interested in solving this problem. And by the way, I'm not looking to bag on Republicans. It's just the reality. They don't believe there's a problem. Why else would every single one of their proposals was completely different from the others? There were no guiding principles. There's no ideology. They were basically just looking for different ways to cut taxes that other Republicans would agree with. The second way you know that they didn't care to solve this is they didn't include any experts in making those policies. No doctors, no policy experts, no academics, definitely no Democrats. They also kept the bipartisan Congressional Budget Office from analyzing any of this stuff before voting. So no one could actually see what impact it would have on the economy. And most of them didn't even read the bill. They didn't even know what the policy was about. They certainly didn't give it to the Democrats in time to read. One guy even said, only people who lead good lives deserve good coverage. Now, the Republicans aren't even bothering with legislation. Instead, they're sabotaging Obamacare and Medicaid, not paying the bills on time, not filling a bunch of jobs to get the thing to run, or just delaying everything. You know, look, I don't blame the Republicans because the 9% of people who are affected by Obamacare would not vote for them anyway, or at all, maybe. There's a much deeper reason why the left and the right aren't getting things done. And they couldn't be screaming it louder. This is not a policy discussion. This is not a morality discussion. This is about values. So what does each side value? If you look at the Bernie Sanders side of the equation, they think that healthcare is a moral right. So does every college student who's ever twisted an ankle trying to chase Ann Coulter up the bell tower. Conservatives have a very different idea. Paul Ryan, Ben Shapiro, the National Review, all of them think healthcare is a commodity to be bought and sold on the free market, just like cornflakes and Lubriderm. By the way, cornflakes and Lubriderm, worst Grand Slam breakfast I've ever had at Denny's. But what if healthcare is neither a commodity nor a right? What if it's a third thing? An expectation. I did an entire episode called Inequality We Trust, or Debunking Inequality. Hey, I'm trying to get clicks. In that episode, I laid out how healthcare snuck in as an expectation in the developed world. And there were others before it. So if you think about it, in the 1800s, you're like, well, all people should have shelter.
This is a moral right. Everyone deserves a house,
as Bernie might say in the 1800s. And then by the early 1900s, you were like, okay, indoor heating, eventually plumbing, electricity and refrigeration, internet and mobile, and now education and healthcare. Except none of those other ones are free. Each one of them steadily got cheaper on its way to full penetration. And who doesn't love full penetration? Now, some vital expectations like heat and electricity are monopoly services we buy. So they do have some legal protections. In a lot of places, you can miss one or two Con Ed bills without entombing your whole family in a block of ice. So if we're going to find a solution for healthcare, especially one where we intervene, we're going to need a rational case for why this new expectation should be universal or free when none of its predecessors were. And the market has brought more innovations to more people faster than socialism or communism ever have. And here's one dirty little secret. The rest of the world relies on us to overspend. We are still by far the most innovative country in delivering new medications and new technology that other countries get to benefit from. That's it for this episode. Join me next week for part two called The 13 Economic Crimes of American Healthcare. You won't want to miss it. I'm Steve Factor for The McFuture. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this, share it with others, review it on iTunes. It's extremely helpful. And I don't know, send me flower arrangements or food in the shape of flowers, something. Anyway, see you next week.